Thank you. Kurt, you can have that seat. We're going to wrap it up. We've got our cleanup hitter here, Kurt DelBene, in a very interesting role. So I'm going to do a little bit of an interview here, and then we'll open it up for questions for the group. And I think Kurt probably has one of the more interesting backgrounds at Microsoft. So I'd love to start there, Kurt, and just describe what you've done, your history, your career.
Well, I'm a long-term Microsoft person. I've been here about 23 years with a gap in between. So I was the president of the Office division, which is both our desktop applications as well as O365 and, at the time, Link, which has moved to Skype for Business. But then I left at the very end of 2013. The president asked me to go and help on healthcare.gov, which...
The president of the United States.
The president of the United States, right. Okay. So... basically, if you remember the chronology, the Affordable Care Act, they turned the site on October 1st, and it crashed and was basically not recoverable. And so they were looking around for people in industry. My wife, who's a congresswoman, said, well, Kurt is willing to help. And so literally about a week later, I was talking to the president in the Oval Office, and he said, I unabashedly beg you to take this job. And I said, okay, I guess I'm not going to say no to the president. So I spent about 6 months being the president's guy on the team to turn it around. And then after that, spent a short stint in venture capital back here at Madrona Group. It was a little slow-paced for me, and started talking to Satya about things I saw from the outside in that I thought Microsoft could take advantage of and leverage, and were really some of the only people in the industry that could. And so he said, why don't you come back? And so I've been back just about exactly 6 months now.
And describe the role that you're in now.
Well, the first thing I had to do is define the role. And so head of corporate strategy and planning doesn't mean anything in and of itself. So I kind of took a comprehensive look at what are the things I can help with. And I really think of our group as doing four things. One, we take an outside-in view of how Microsoft is doing, both in terms of how we see the products performing, and also what we see as competitive issues and intel that we get from competition to give everybody kind of an outside-in view of how we see the company. Second, I have a very long list of issues across the products that my team helps drive. Either we drive them by having one of the product leaders say, okay, fine, I'll take that issue, and we'll come back to the senior leadership team and we'll report out on that issue. Or in a lot of cases, we actually start up strategy topics where we dive in deep with the teams to solve them. Third thing is we work on kind of transformative business ideas. If we look at where we are in the industry and say, wow, if we just pivoted our business in this way, it would get a lot larger, or we could address more of a customer need. And then the fourth thing we're starting to do is look holistically at businesses we are not in today that we should be able to assess, should we be in this business or not? What's the opportunity for Microsoft? What customer problems could we solve? Stack rank those and say, oh, some of these on the top of that list, we ought to pull those off and do a deeper analysis. So those are kind of the four things
That's
my
good.
Team
Let
works
me
on.
Start just in this discussion going to healthcare.gov, because it's, you know, it's not Microsoft related, but I know one of the things that's always interesting is how did that become such a mess, and then how did you turn it around?
So I'm sure you guys all saw it in the paper, but they did just about everything wrong that you could do with an IT project of that scope. And so if you think about it from the, people ask, what's the one thing? And the one thing, which I think has implications for everybody, is if you think about what they were asked to do, what the Affordable Care Act asked them to do, is create something that is as complex as Amazon.com. And the seminal error where it all started going off is the IT team said, I think we can do that. I think we can build that. And what, above all, you have to recognize is what core competencies we as an IT organization have, and where do we need to bring in people to augment that before we go off. And they very quickly designed the architecture for it. They started farming out pieces to different contractors. When the contractors came back and said, I think we're going to do something like model-driven development for the user experience, they had no way of saying that's an absurd thing to do on something that's like Amazon.com. And every single thing I think you can think of is cascading from that decision that we're going to go it alone, we think we know how to do this, we're going to farm it all out. And there's a lot of things along the way, like they had no telemetry, they had no beta, period. They used overly complex database, they used an overly complex login system. But if I were to tie it all back, it comes to that one decision that they made early on.
And did they farm a lot of the work out then?
Every single piece of it.
Really?
Right, and it was to different contractors. So they had CGI Federal did the user experience. They had a team called Optum, which is part of United Health Group, that did the database and the login system. Optum, actually, I would say, was one of the heroes in this, because as their pieces of it went well, and they said to the president, they said to the Secretary Sebelius of HHS, we as a company are going to stand behind you, and we will make we will do uneconomic things to make this right. So they became our kind of lead project manager across all of this. But yeah, they farmed out each piece of it.
And then what did you do? How did you come in and turn it around in a short period of time?
So it comes back to getting back to the priorities. So we did a few things. We started having a war room where everybody came together, and we had experts on each piece of the system, and they all were there 24/7. We found some places they didn't have a good enough set of people, so we pushed them. We had the president talk to some of the CEOs of some of these organizations, said, you're not bringing us your A game, your A people, and they actually swapped people out.
Really?
We created massive telemetry. I told the president, this was towards when enrollment was, we were gonna get to our peak. I said, because we have so all this telemetry, we're all staring at this telemetry at all times, and we can see just before it's about to crest and peak over in trouble. And he says, oh, it's just like Star Trek. Give me more power, Scotty. And I said, I didn't know what to say. I said, you're right, Mr. President. It's just like that. So it's all about getting telemetry, getting a dashboard, getting all the experts there. And then it's just brutal prioritization. It's bringing all the team together on a regular basis. If there are 10 priorities, we said we exercise ruthless prioritization, which meant until you had the number one problem solved, you didn't get to look at the problems below it. And so if you saw in the press, you saw we weren't working on financial systems. We knew we weren't working on financial systems. We just said, you know, when somebody comes to us and can't adjudicate an appeal, and they have to go into the hospital, and they can't adjudicate an appeal as to whether they have the health care or not, we're not going to work on financial systems until we get that solved. We swapped out a bunch of contractors that we didn't think were performing, and then it was just turning the crank. We got the releases down to small pieces with individual bugs that were getting fixed. They're everything that we do in commercial software, but we had to do it while we were also tripling the capacity of the system. And we also looked very intensively on their security. The first place I went when I got there was to their security team, because I thought to myself, if there's going to be a problem here, if we ever had a breach, the Republicans, and this isn't a partisan statement, the Republicans could have gone to Congress and said, look, they've just breached your personal information, game over.
Yeah.
And so instead of it going to Congress 50-some times and being rejected, it would have actually, I think, probably would have gone through.
Yeah, you're right.
So, but it's all disciplined practices, but doing it in real time really intensively.
That's fascinating. And that didn't convince you to stay in public sector then? You came back to the commercial side?
Well, I will tell you, it jades you, or it sets a very high bar for what meaning means in your job. Because if you think you're giving people health care, that's a pretty high bar. But in the end, you know, I'm a tech guy, and so I love the technology. I love what it can do for our customers, and so it was a unique opportunity that I got to play.
So let's shift a little bit to Microsoft, especially kind of take your current role with the role you used to have. You used to run the entire Office division, which is, you know, well, at the time was what, probably like $20 billion business.
At 20 Microsoft. 24 at the
24
time,
billion dollars, and you're one of the founders of Office 365 too at the time.
Right.
Compare and contrast what the cloud meant to our commercial customers then to what you see now in the trends in the industry with the cloud and our commercial customers.
It's a great question. One of the key trends that I think is most exciting is the evolution of the cloud over the past just couple of years. And so whereas we were 2 years ago probably trying to encourage people as the value proposition of going to Office 365, now that value proposition is pretty well established, so the kinds of dialogues we're having are different. The capabilities that we're delivering, for instance, in like the data loss protection and rights management that we're building into 365 are much deeper. Skype going to be a cloud service is deeper. It's like that bet is coming into fruition really well. Same thing on the client as a subscription. We're seeing a lot of uptake of the E3 version of Office 365 that includes the client. People are accepting this notion that or embracing it, that they want an always up-to-date client, and that's a reasonable thing to expect. So that I think there's been a huge evolution there, and we're probably just delivering on that vision that we set out when we just said, you know, both servers and clients are going to be an ongoing subscription. The place where there's huge rapid adoption, I think, is in the cloud platform adoption. I think you're getting to the point where people are saying, okay, now it's beyond do I want to move to the cloud, it's what workloads do I want to evaluate to move to the cloud. Yeah. I think the expectations are different around, you know, we used to say, hey, it's all about hybrid and having a great story that goes across on premises in the cloud. Now people are saying, yeah, it's all about hybrid. Now let me look at what I'm going to move and what time frame I'm going to move those. And so I think that's changed. And then the third thing I would say is we are now looking very intensively at our story as to how our investments include both on-premises and the cloud in a holistic way. Whether you're talking about how I manage my estate, when now my estate goes across the two, whether you think about the security problem of like, you know, we've got threats that happen on-premises in my estate, I've got threats that are driven by my devices, and I've got them in the cloud. How would I get a dashboard that goes across all of those and gives me a single pane of glass on that security threat? So everything is much more advanced, and really the value proposition's gotten a lot better.
So then if you take the role that you're in now, where you're looking at kind of trends in the market, yep, and what's going on, where do you see it going in the future in terms of cloud adoption? And take a kind of maybe non-biased Microsoft view, cloud providers, yep, as well in the future.
Well, it depends upon how opinionated you want me to get.
Be opinionated.
Okay. Let's see. I think we are moving from a world where it's all about IaaS and PaaS as a platform to thinking about how it is, what your solution is. And part of that's what I already talked about of how does my estate go across on-premises in the cloud. Part of it is also what are the value-added workloads that are going to get unlocked by virtue of going to the cloud. And so obviously a bunch of our strength comes from you move these applications to the cloud. Now I want rich data analytics and machine learning and rich database services. That is our core competency and a very strong value proposition. But you're going to see people kind of figure out what are their particular strengths and how do they leverage them. I think you're seeing it to be a kind of a two-horse race if you look at market share. I think you've got Amazon and you've got us, and the market, Azure is coming on very strongly. Amazon obviously has a strong position, but if you were to talk to analysts, I think they would kind of say, yeah, those are the two folks to watch. I think you're going to see a big battle for verticals over a period of time. Once the basic foundation is there, people are going to say, in manufacturing, what are the core value-added services that make a great manufacturing platform? You know, and IoT, I think, is a piece of that. And IoT is interesting, but it's a lot more interesting if you think about it in the context of manufacturing, in the context of healthcare, et cetera. So I think you'll see the stack go deeper and deeper over time as well.
One of the things you were instrumental on, to share with this group, is you, when you ran Office, your team developed Office for Android and iOS.
We did.
Before we launched them. And so, you know, I think talk about Microsoft and how we think about competitors and the ecosystem to, you know, in the past versus today and our strategy today, because it seems like we're doing a lot of crazy things in terms of partnerships and other platforms. And talk about that strategy chain for Microsoft, since you're kind of at the center of that during your career here.
So what Ron's referring to, the actual software to build, to make Office run on iPad actually happened while I was leading the team, and it came to a point where I had discussions with Steve, and Steve was really kind of conflicted about it. He thought of us as the Windows company first and foremost, and would Office be strong if Windows wasn't strong? And my perspective was both need to be strong, and Office will not be able to fundamentally be the thing that changes that equation one way or the other. But what it could do if we didn't have cross-platform is it could reduce the value of Office and the value proposition for Office fairly substantially. And so we went back and forth a couple of times. He finally said, nope, I don't want to ship it. And one of the very first things that Satya did when he became CEO is he shipped the iPad version of Office, which first time I met back with him, I said, thank you very much for shipping the iPad version of Office. But it's reflective of there is an absolute belief that we live in a cross-platform world. And we love our phone strategy. You know, I love the Windows 10 phone strategy of having Continuum, where you can have it on the desktop, you can have it on a mobile phone, same applications run on both form factors. But we also have to accept the fact that the majority of folks out there have either an Android phone or they have an iOS-based phone. And so we want to be the absolute best experience on those devices for productivity, but we want to take it a step further. We want to take it when you have a set of things that you're doing on your desktop, they should move with you. You should be able to be prompted for what are the apps I want to install on my Android phone because I happen to have Office. And you'll see us invest, I think, in those companion strategies very deeply, as well as thinking about mobile first scenarios. OneNote is one example of that, but you'll see us invest more and more on scenarios that are unique to that mobile device.
That's good. And I'm going to open it up for questions. We should have mics in the back, so feel free to raise your hand. Mics will come out and then give you a card. And any questions are fair game.
Any questions,
across the board.
Yep.
Kurt can talk company strategy questions all the way down to market trends. While there questions are coming,
yeah.
One of the things we were talking about in the back is security. And
yeah.
You know, security is such a big topic, and I think we've got a bit of a unique approach to security. But talk a little bit about how you, Satya, Microsoft, approach security and think about security in terms of how we benefit and help customers in that.
Well, again, going back to the HHS story for a bit with healthcare.gov, the thing that I have seen, and I'm sure it resonates with you guys as well, is that there's a huge amount of innovation going on in the security space right now, but it's also creating a cacophony of different solutions out there. And I think we see some of our customers saying, I honestly can't figure out completely how any of these pieces fit together tightly, but I like the value proposition of this particular piece of security software, I'm just gonna buy it. And we get a lot of, I'm gonna buy one of everything. And so that can be great, but unless you've looked at what your overall view is and whether you have secured your estate end to end, and you've thought about that in terms of prevention, detection, remediation, and forensic analysis on what the heck just happened, then you haven't really solved the problem. And so I think I've been pushing for really getting a tight end-to-end both story and investment strategy around our security investments. And one of the things that got me most excited is I think we actually have the deepest set of features across the board today, and we just need to do a great job of stitching those together into an end-to-end set of capabilities. And so if I think about this solution as having it's about managing your devices, and whether those devices are Windows devices or whether they're third-party devices, you need to be able to manage both. It's about managing your estate, and your estate means both on-premises and the cloud and having a rational story that goes across the two of those. And then it's about managing your data, too. And so we think about investments as falling into those three categories. If I think about devices, you think about the security that we have in Windows, the ability to have telemetry that goes to the cloud and lets us see across all those Windows devices where those attacks are coming from and actually mitigate those attacks in real time. If you think we also have products around EMS where it's all about investing in management across all of your devices. In terms of managing your estate, we have a very rich set of products in terms of collecting security logs, doing analysis in the cloud. I think movement to the cloud for those products is going to be very deep, very fast moving. I think you're going to find the most innovative products in security for managing your estate or your devices are going to be cloud resident in the future. And then the final piece is about investing in data security around Office 365. Things like, as I said before, data loss protection, so we can alert you as to whether data is coming out of your organization that ought to be secure. But a really rich, forensics capability to see who shared what with whom, policy administration, et cetera. But unless you come up with the whole story and figure out how all the pieces come in, then you're going to be vulnerable. And then the last thing I'd say is it's a partnership of both first-party products we provide and also having an extensible platform so the third-party products can fit in, too.
Yeah, so it's a very broad security approach. Let's go to question number three.
So I just wanted to pick up on the comments you made about interoperability, right? So all of us live in a heterogeneous world, and that continues to be our futures, right? It's good that finally you guys have recognized that we're not going to buy everything and replace everything with Microsoft tools. So, but talk to me a little bit about, or talk to us a little bit about how that those conversations go internally when, you know, the fact that you might support interoperability with a competitor's product means that we're not licensing something that you produce. How do those discussions go? How do they play out for companies like ours? How should we be thinking about that in the context of our dealings with you?
It's a good question. You know, I don't think that the question comes out in terms of supporting competitors except for on the operating system more than anything. So there is a healthy tension that exists still between the Office organization and the Windows organization in terms of features being unique to Windows, features or not, what's the pace of innovation around Android, what's the pace of innovation around iOS. You saw Kirk Koenigsbauer actually on stage at the Apple announcement for the iPad Pro. That's probably emblematic of, you know, there was certainly a gnashing of teeth around back at Redmond from some folks about that particular announcement. But I think we have moved to a world on that particular point where we're moving more and more to the Office devices being common code. And the nirvana in our mind is that there's a common code base that is behind what is shipped on all the different operating systems. And we focus the uniqueness of Windows around innovation that we can do in partnership with Windows. So we never get into the discussion anymore about, holy cow, we've got this really cool feature in Office. Would we ever restrict delivering it onto a different platform? The only discussion we have anymore is how quick can we get those features that customers are asking for. Can we deliver those? And so that's probably the point of greatest conflict, and I think we've resolved it pretty well. So how do you interact with it? I think it's fair game to ask us why this feature isn't on these other devices. I think the answer you will get back more and more will be worth getting there, and eventually you'll see all the features that aren't unique to Windows, you'll see them be cross-platform.
Yeah, and just to comment, Kirk Koenigsbauer is one of our vice presidents from our Office group. And those of you who didn't see it was at the last iPhone launch event showing off Office on Apple
iPad
products.
iPad Pro.
Yeah. So we did get a lot of feedback on that. The other one, if you could comment on that also has raised a lot of eyebrows, is the partnership with Salesforce.com and how we compete with them every day, except we also have dedicated engineers, Salesforce, building integration.
We do.
We
do. Obviously, we have a product in Dynamics. We love Dynamics. Dynamics is used both directly to be your CRM solution or your XRM solution. It's also used in a lot of cases to be a system above Salesforce.com to do a unique development or application. And so there's obviously a healthy tension there between, you know, supporting Salesforce.com because our customers use a lot of it and supporting Dynamics or in wanting to lead with Dynamics. And so we have to live in the dual world there. I think there's if I kind of look into the future, I think there's interesting things to think about. There is the greatest innovation in sales automation solutions right now is happening above Salesforce or above Dynamics. And so you take, you know, pick your favorite product, whether it's Inside Sales or Radius or there's any number of them, Marketo. These are all systems that pull data out of what they consider Salesforce to be kind of a system of record, if you will. And they operate they do a unique solution that's very specific to that, and then they replicate back. And so I think the thing to think about as you guys figure, you know, what's the future of my sales automation strategy of interacting with customers, how much of that is going to be a Salesforce solution or built into the Dynamics solution versus how much is going to be a set of solutions that ride on top?
So that's an interesting one because, you know, especially with your time in venture capital, if I'm one of the folks in the room, they have startups coming to them all the time. What advice would you give in terms of using startups in your environment and bringing them in addition to some of the traditional players, knowing they might get acquired, knowing they may not be ready for prime time? How would you advise this group?
Well, it's an interesting conflict because if you get in on the ground floor with a startup, you can get some very intensive participation with them as they try to build out their product with you being one of their marquee customers. And so that's a positive thing. They can build a solution that works for you. I think you ultimately, at the end of the day, have to forecast whether you think this thing's going to have takeoff or not. Because if you get stuck with something that's very specific to your solution, or you look at the needs and you say, wow, holy cow, in one sense, this is perfectly what I need, but I haven't decided whether I think it would make, whether the broader business is there, then you could end up having a bespoke solution or close to bespoke solution that doesn't have takeoff velocity. So I think you actually, oddly enough, have to believe they have a very generalizable solution, while at the same time, if you partner with them early, you know, there's high risk involved, but you can also get, you can be in on the ground floor. I do think it's always valuable to say, if I can imagine a big player stealing these guys over time, you will, most cases, you'll only benefit from that over a period of time, because then they'll integrate it in to their broader solutions. But it's an interesting question.
Just check and see if there are any questions, and if not, I'll wrap up with one more question. A lot of the companies here are becoming software companies, you know, and you're seeing the CIO being leaned on a lot in the organization to build product and new offerings and new go-to-markets. And drawing on your experience, healthcare.gov, your VC experience, your Microsoft experience, what advice would you give a company that is not traditionally a tech company,
right,
that needs to move into tech to compete and stay up with the disruption or disrupt their
right
industry?
That's a really good question. If you go back to healthcare.gov, I kind of said what I thought the core issue was. The way they could have mitigated that one in particular is to have what I've referred to as a trusted advisor, somebody that is deep in the industry that understands how to design these systems and works with them, basically works with them from the beginning to end to say, hey, this is what the architecture ought to look like. And they've done it before. These shouldn't be people that have only been in contracting firms. They should actually have worked on some of these large-scale systems as well. They can basically, when CGI, for instance, would have come to and said, we're going to use model-driven development, would have said, that's probably not a good idea. Why don't we think again? And that's a lot of the role that I and others played. They came back with a solution on how we would do financial management. I looked at it and I said, that has no chance of succeeding whatsoever. And we went back to the drawing board on a lot of it. So I think that's really key. The second thing is, cloud is really your friend in this sense. So we built the system out. If you think about people buying healthcare, it's very peaky around the 15th of the month, because if you signed up by the 15th of the month, then you were covered by the beginning of the next month. And it was peaky within each month, but then it was monstrously peaky towards the end of the enrollment period. 75% of the people who signed up for healthcare.gov did it within the last 30 days of open enrollment. It just, we're a country of procrastinators, essentially. So you don't want to build the system. We built the system out to handle that peak capacity. Millions of dollars spent that it had been built at as a cloud solution. We would have basically just said, we need more credits, we need more capacity, and the surge would have happened perfectly normally. And so the cloud is your friend in anything that's going to have this peakiness. But the cloud is also your friend in the sense that, you know, what any of the cloud vendors are going to do is they're going to pattern match. They're going to say, what are the things that are unique across all these different applications? What are the implementation, the development cycles that people go through, and how they build these solutions? And they're going to build them right into the platform. So going with a cloud solution versus rolling your own on-premises, you're going to get the benefit of that as well. However, you got to make some bets on who you're going to trust as a cloud vendor as well. Are they geographically located across the world? Do they do isolation the right way? Do they have good uptime capabilities? You've got to assess them just as if you're assessing the vendors that you're going to depend on on-premises as well.
Right. Good. Good answer. Good insight, Kurt. Really want to thank you for coming out. Appreciate your time.
Sure, and thanks.
Well,
thanks to all of you for being fantastic Microsoft partners and customers. And please keep the feedback going. We're always trying to improve. Feedback about where you see the market going. Feedback about our products. What we can do to improve them over time.
Yeah, and Kurt's always accessible too. You know, if you have feedback for Kurt,
I'm kurtd@microsoft.com.
Great.
So
thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.